Hello, Cubers. This is Liam here with episode 12 of MTG in 3D, and joining me today on the podcast is Pedro.
Hello, everyone.
And our very special guest, Thomas.
Hi.
So, Thomas, would you just care to introduce yourself for our listeners quickly?
Yeah, hi, my name is Thomas Kroonen, I'll say in Dutch. I'm the owner of, owner is of course a weird word, but I'm TO for the Cube Rotational, which is a yearly 16-player Cube tournament run in Amsterdam. This year was our fifth year. I really don't know what to say more about it before...
Now we'll get to that, don't worry.
Because I might delve into different subjects and we'll just get totally sidetracked.
Well, that's what we want you here. We're going to get sidetracked into all kinds of different topics here. So, but before we do get into that, there's some Cube-related news. As we promised our listeners, we're going to kick off every week with a bit of Cube-tinted specs news. And on this week, we've got a really interesting, huge sweeping changes to FNM as a format in general, or as an event. So, I mean, Pedro, do you want to walk us through that?
I was checking the Pro Tour coverage, because I was really hoping for Alain Bergeot to say, yes, we will release Modern Masters 2 in May 2015, and yes, those are the three GPs we have scheduled, and yes, one of them is in Lisbon. No, hopefully, but it won't. And then she, okay, so let's talk about FNM. And it was like those Seth Trombone sounds, you know? Wah, wah, wah. But it actually is quite interesting because up until this, I don't know exactly when it starts. We will try to link all the information we have on the show notes. Up until this point, the sanctionable formats were standard, modern, booster draft, I believe block constructed. That was it.
Yeah.
Right now, essentially, you can sanction anything you want.
Literally
anything you want.
So that could be Commander, or EDH, even Cube?
Yes, that's why we are talking about that.
Yeah.
This is probably going to most, I'm not going to say most, but some people Cube at their local gaming stores. So this is a good way for both the people playing in Cubes and the store owners to sort of formalize things. And you can actually play for something. You get access to FNM promos, and I think it's a good change. And I think this is all we know so far. Correct me if I'm mistaken.
Yeah, I think you covered most things. I mean, this is going to obviously give a lot of room for creativity, and especially this is going to be particularly interesting for Cube owners, right? You can envisage the Cubes are going to be in stores, and the store owner is going to try and maintain them, and maybe the regulars are going to have a say, and kind of by committee, and it's going to be cool, actually. I'm kind of excited to see what comes out of this.
Is this something you would consider, Thomas?
Yeah, sure. Besides the fact that we don't play on Friday, but... might have to look into that. In fact, it's not really a first, because back when we had the WPN, I, in fact, registered at the Wizards website, and I got the promo foils, which I handed out at Cube Drafts. It was probably 4 or 5 years back, and then
they killed
the program, and I couldn't get any more foils because I wasn't an actual store. But it was really weird, because I got a lot of foils, and I could give one to every player, and the guy who did the normal drafts, he had to split them across multiple tables. It was kind of off because I could get a lot and he could get only give his players a few. But in the end, I just ended up giving him all my foils because, well, I thought it was weird to just hoard all these foils. And so I just gave them to the other TO.
You're a kind man, Thomas.
Right, yes. Thanks.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think for people with, this is something else that I know you guys wanted to talk about, people with pimped cubes, whether you want to take those out in public or not, and that's something
you
guys...
Oh, yeah, let's wait a bit before
we can go into that later. But
yeah, so, Thomas...
I would say this is a fine point to delve into that, because it segues right, it's really the next you would talk about if you discuss Cube FNM, right?
Oh, yeah, like I said... Right now I only cube with people whom I trust.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm almost paranoid sometimes. I mean, it's only cardboard, but when you start to think about it, you can sell it and buy a car or something.
Well, are you aware that any card over $100 is worth more than its weight in gold?
Oh.
Did not know that.
Okay.
So that's a cool factoid, right?
Yeah, just don't tell everybody.
Okay.
Of course, cards are light, so it doesn't. You cannot say that it's worth the same as gold. But if you weigh it, if you go by metrics, then it's actually true.
Oh wow!
Is that a valid reason to not bother to pimp your cube or to de-pimp your cube and just stick to the cheaper versions of cards?
I think it's a very good reason. Sort of to go back to the people you only draft cube with the people you trust.
Yeah.
I've built my player base around the cafe that Jan also mentioned.
Just as a quick aside, if you, our dear listeners remember, a few months ago on episode 6, we had Jan van der Vecht. And Jan was the first one to tell us about the Cube Invitational. It's an awesome opportunity to talk about that. But yeah, you were talking about your local cafe.
Yeah, it's called the Twee Klaveren, which means the Two of Clubs. It's, you know, in the normal card game.
Okay.
Yeah, they have backgammon tournaments and chess tournaments, but it's also, it used to be really a magic hotbed. Bram Stapfangers used to play there, and Noah Boeke, former world champion Julien Nuiten.
Yeah.
They all played there. So it's not really like a gaming store, and we draft with these people. It's probably 3 to 4 tables each Monday, so you really get to know these guys, and sometimes you chat about Cube and all the formats, and sometimes, when I trust people, I put them on the mailing list. I think I have a 35 to 40 people mailing list now, and I think in the past 5 years, about 50 unique players have paid qualifiers. Some just don't like Cube, which actually happens. And others move and stuff happens, so that's why the list is shorter now than the total people that played. I don't just let anybody play, so I have to talk to them before to sort of gauge what kind of person they are.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But the de-pimping is not really about worrying; it's about money.
Oh yeah, that's what I was figuring out because I really enjoy looking at my cube and have all these foil versions, and my drafters love that. They look at me and say, "There's one card on this booster pack that's not foil. This is inadmissible."
Exactly, it's like a Douthy horror or something.
Yeah, something like that. And I obviously enjoy that myself, but sometimes I just wonder. I mean, at this point, I could own a set of power. You know?
No, it's true. For me, the bottom line was somebody, I used to have all the judge fetch.
Yeah.
Somebody said to me, "Is this the most expensive card in your foil?" He was talking, in your cube. He was talking about the Delta. And I said, "I have no clue because I bought them when they were released for 40, 50 euros each."
Yeah.
And I started looking at prices and I thought, oh my God, this is insane.
Like 200 or something for the Delta?
Yeah. So I started to realize if I cash in all these, because they don't have different art, they're just foil. So at first I would just, if there was a judge foil, I would just get out and buy it. I didn't even bother to think whether or not it was more pretty. And then afterwards, I started thinking, do I actually like this foil, like the Survival of the Fittest foil? So I said, no, I don't think it's nicer than the original. I'll just sell it. And I was selling all the fetch and Bitter Blossom and other stuff. Then I rebought normal versions. From what I had left, I bought the CE Black Lotus, and I bought the Bazaar, and I bought Workshop. So it allowed me, with the same money, actually, to put more cards in my cube.
Yeah. Okay.
I would consider a regular Mishra's Workshop still pretty pimp.
Yeah, true. Granted, but I would just look for a banged up one.
Oh yeah, sure.
So I would pay about 2/3 of the going rate, and it would also coincide nicely with what I would call debug proofing my cube.
I love it.
So in the end, it became a process that was just constantly going on.
Yeah,
it's a fair point. I mean, even you're going to play with people you trust, you hope, right? Even it being a public place, be it in the safety and comfort of your own home or someone else's home. But, you know, if it happens, someone can spill a drink or whatever.
Had that happen.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I take the approach, I like to have stuff kind of pimped, but if I've got, like, my Worldwake Jace foil, I sold that and got a kind of From the Vault one, just to have a bit less locked up, but it's still shiny, right? So
yeah. To me, it's gotten to a point where I really don't care. I'm not going out of my way to find any foil or special version. There might be one that I really like. I think it's beautiful because it has different art. I might chase it, but it's not something that I actively do.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I think that's a pretty healthy approach to take. I mean, it means you've got less assets locked up in something that's pretty fragile.
Yeah, and whatever can reduce the paranoia sometimes.
Yeah, no, the biggest clincher for me was the moment that I realized that I could do, like I said, more with the same amount of money. Because I'm not taking the money and actually buying a small car. I'm getting more magic cards.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fair point. So, but let's get back to the beginning. You said you used to play at sorry, I can't pronounce the name, that Two of Clubs Cafe.
Yeah.
And so how did you get the idea to start the Cube Vitational?
Well, first off, I still draft there every Monday, just like Jan.
Okay.
I think I've done now for the past 7 or 8 years. I think I started there with Time Spiral. How did the Cube Vitational start? My first time I heard about Cube was through Evan Irwin's magic show, because I was gleaming the Cube and they were talking about it. I said, oh my God, this is awesome. And it was roughly around the same time that I was selling out of Standard, because tournament magic wasn't really for me. It took too much time and I didn't want to know all the matchups. And I just said, okay, let's just minimalize magic to what I really like instead of doing all sorts of different things that I do not like.
Yeah, sure.
So And then one time at the Toeclaveren, Julien Nuiten, I don't know if you know who he is.
Let me see if I get this right. Is he the guy who streams Legacy matches?
No, he stopped Magic completely. He was the 2004 World Champion.
I imagine his name to be Julien Nuiten or something.
It's Nuiten.
Nuiten, yes. Sorry about that.
No, no problem. Dutch is weird.
Yeah. No, yeah. One of the first things I bought to play with my brother was the World Championship decks.
Yeah.
And so, I actually played with the Julian's deck.
That slide deck is really nice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. On Slowblock.
Yeah, yeah.
For the American, yeah.
So he brought a cube, I think, about a month after I saw this Evan Irwin thing. So I actually got to play one, and I said, okay, I'm definitely going to do it now. But at that time, there were no lists floating around, so I just started with what I had. So I like this card, don't like that card, like this card, don't like that card. I started with a 400-count cube. It was 7 years ago, I think, and then the cube grew, and I got some friends together through the Toeclaveren.
Yeah.
Because I started asking around, because it was just me, and I had a cube, and I need 7 other guys, right? So who wants to cube? Oh, okay. Eventually we got a number of guys and the list started growing. And then after around 2 years, probably 2009, I thought, I want to play this with 16 people. That would be awesome. And I don't know where the idea came from. It just popped up. And I didn't want to be the one to decide who would get to play this one time that I got 16 players. So that's when I thought, I'll make it a tournament.
Awesome.
Which was inspired by the Bram Vitational, which is a tournament that was run by Bram Snapvangers, the Hall of Famer. He used to be a Dutch TO. I think he still does, but I'm not sure. And you could win points during the normal tournaments. And if you get enough points, you would go to the Bram Vitational. So there I sort of combined my wishes to cube with more than 8 with his tournament. And I thought, this is going to be the Cube Vitational.
Nice.
We tried a lot of setups in the last 5 years. First year, we drafted on 2 tables of 8, and it would just be one big Swiss tournament. So you could either play your neighbor or the guy at the other table, which was kind of weird, but people still had fun because, hey, they were cubing. And then top 4 was, I think it was a cascade draft, which was really weird. You could see 8 cards of all the boosters were shuffled together. You could see 8, pick one, put the rest in the pile.
Oh, yes.
And then you get to reshuffle the pile so you could re-see cards that you shipped. It was okay. And then second year we top 4 was sealed. The normal tournament, I believe it was that you had to go 2-1 or better in the first draft. And then you could get we had a table winners and a table failures. and then the top 3 from the winners table plus the winner from the failed table would play top 4, and they, as I said, they played sealed, which turned out sort of weird because one guy opened, I think it was Shard, Witness, Time Walk, plus Ways to Tutor It, so he just crushed everybody. I think the finals were like 4. I think he played 4-0, and it wasn't even close. I know it's a small sample size, but that led me to saying, you know, sealed is not it.
Okay.
So next year, it was actually the third year, was my favorite way to play top 4, which I won't do again because it takes far too much time.
Rochester?
Winchester.
No, oh, Winchester. No, yeah, I meant to say rotisserie, actually, but... Yeah, Winchester.
Rochester's also a thing.
Yeah. You placed for top four in the third year by, I believe it was, by winning, which is, would have morning drafts and afternoon drafts. If you won a table, you would place in top four.
Okay.
The reasoning was, you win a draft to be here at the Cupertational, so if you win a draft at the Cupertational, you can go top four. This was weird for the afternoon drafts because you had two winners in there, so I had to pair those against other finals losers and give them buys, and it was sort of awkward. Yeah, yeah. But the top four was really cool because we had a two-headed giant Winchester.
Oh, wow.
Sweet.
And so the guys that teamed up the best and crushed the other guys, they had to face off in the finals.
Right.
So, wow. you work together and then you have to fight for the actual title.
Well, that's cool. So you kind of know the other guy's deck then?
No, because top two, or finals, was they played Solomon. It was just different.
Oh, wow.
Different decks.
I see.
Yeah, we've been experimenting a lot.
Yeah, I'd say.
And I say we because there are a couple of TOs and other judges who play, so I always bounce my ideas off them.
Sure, it sounds like within the competition, you've got a ton of different draft styles, formats going on, you've got different formats of things. It's kind of cool.
And then last year, sorry, I'm just going to do all five now because
go ahead.
We're already more than halfway. Last year, I had the same idea, just win a pod to make top four. And then last year was the first year I had One Drop Cube. And One Drop Cube was born after firstly reading Glenn Jones, I think, from Star City.
Yeah, I think it's his cube, yeah.
I read his blog around, I think, a year before I made the One Drop Cube. And around about the time I cut the black aggro and green aggro from my cube, I had all these one drops, and then the ideas sort of meshed together. So, I'll make a one drop cube. And then when I had one, I thought, what should I do with it? And then the idea came, so let's use it for top four, because I made one for four players, so it was kind of a natural fit.
Okay, yeah.
Well, that makes sense.
And then this year I did I think I'm going to keep this year's setup, because I really like it. Double elim into the one drop top four. I think it plays really well, because you already have bubble matches in round two. So people can already be eliminated at 12 o'clock. Then 8 advance and 8 don't. And the 8 that don't get to play a qualifier for next year. So they still get the cube, which is nice.
I imagine you, if someone gets eliminated at 12 o'clock, what do they do? Do they just hang around and grab a beer or three or something?
No. First off, they play third round.
Yeah.
They always just play the third round. No, nobody leaves. And then, well, the second draft is a qualifier for next year. So they still get to play.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So one half of the cube goes to the top eight and the other half goes to the new qualifier.
Okay. Yeah. That's a nice setup. I think I like it.
Yeah. Well, it took me 5 years to get here. And, I think we're gonna use it next year and maybe evaluate again after that, but this is the first time that I thought I'm going to keep it the way I did it.
If it's worked out well, if it ain't broke, then fix it.
Yeah, true.
So, I mean, it's the composition of the cube as well. Is this something that you've kind of evolved over the years according to, you know, the preferences of the guys you play with, of, you know, their feedback, and how is that?
Yeah, that's where it started, because, as I said before, I actually started with what I had, which was I had a lot of older cards because I started playing in the Revised Dark, and then I stopped again at Homeland. And then I picked it up again around Onslaught Scourge. So there was sort of a hole in what I had because I never cashed out. I just kept everything.
Yeah. Oh,
so
it
just started with it's back to a conversation I have with two of the old Magic buddies. I'm always lamenting the fact that we missed Unlimited. Oh, we didn't get to open the Sweet Moxes, and he just said, Thomas, listen. We were 14, 15. We would have traded all those Muxes for all the dragons. So just be happy that we didn't get to experience.
After 15 years looking back. And...
So I just used everything I had, like I said, and then we started playing. Players just said, why isn't this in? Why isn't that in? I just look at the cards. Oh, well, they do have a point. So I just started swapping stuff, and Liam, you looked at my list. I try not to be an archetype cube, which I know it sounds weird because green is rampy and red is aggro and white is aggro elements. But I try not to push things too much. I try to be a good cards cube and an answers cube instead of forcing people to draft certain archetypes. So that's sort of where it's evolved in a lot. I'm sure that if I would have to make a cube from scratch, I would have never ended up here. It's just because I've had one for 7 years and some cards remain in, and also because I'm really a stickler for curve. So I always cut not just on quality and underperformance, but always on keeping the curve that I have intact or even sharpening it, making it lower. Sure. The one thing I'm missing on Cube Tutor, and I've been mailing Ben every other week. Ben, when can we have converted mana cost for the entire cube?
Oh, give the man a break. He's a newlywed.
I know, but I want to know if I'm still at 3.25.
I was discussing that just yesterday with a friend of mine. He asked, because I told him my cube's converted mana cost is like 2.99.
Oh, that's low.
Yeah, and he asked, where did you get that, on Cube Tutor? And I said, no, in an Excel spreadsheet by hand.
Yeah, I've been there, done that.
Yeah, I used to have that, but then Cube Tutor came and I was a fool and I deleted all. Because I didn't want to manage the thing on more than three platforms.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I did. One of the things that suck out of me of your cube is I think there is quite a lot of high mana cost stuff floating around. Is that a product of what your players enjoy? Because I noticed a lot of the decks in the most recent Cube Invitational. We're talking sort of multiple 6-drop, 7-drops in 70% of the decks. And is that your players particularly like, you know, the broken, cheap strategies you can get? Or?
I'm not sure, because there was a point somewhere within the last 7 years, somebody said, Thomas, your cube is too dragony. You have a dragon cube.
Yes, you have heard that term before. I've heard it before.
Yeah, so I said, what do you mean? Because I didn't know at the time. So it's just, there are too many 6-drops and everything is too high. It just comes down to who can stick it. So I actively started lowering the number of high curve creatures that are in there, but because I have a 16 player cube, you can still have drafts where the number is relatively high. So that And also I have to admit that a few guys that consistently do well, they really like their expensive 7-color value decks.
Like so,
is that person named Jan van der Vecht? I would assume.
Yeah, he said does well.
Yeah. Oh,
zing! No, we have Thijs, the declare, used to be Dutch champion, and he just likes to run all the unfair biggies.
Yeah,
he's known for drafting 15 land first and then sorting the rest out later.
A perfectly valid strategy, in my opinion.
Yes. Yeah, well, I'm no way near that good. I would call myself an average player. I'm 5-4 guy at the GP. I think if you look at my record overall, I'm probably 6-12, 6-9. But so I tend to play a lot of aggro decks because people ship me those cards, and I'm really good at combat math. So the expensive cards, I think it's just the way the cube was split that you're seeing a lot of those.
That's interesting. Yeah. I saw there's one really hard red-white aggro deck, which kind of jumped out to me.
Mm-hmm.
I just checked my converted mana cost. My cube is 2.6. Just to bring it up, really.
But just to put things in context, Thomas, Liam actually plays Mental Misstep and it's good.
Yes.
Okay.
Take that with a grain of salt.
Well, they only have my word for that. you have to draft my cube with me sometime.
But one thing I noticed as well is you're at 673 cards.
Yeah, so that's
this means you play 14 card booster packs.
Yes.
Reason for that?
It means I play 14 card booster packs when playing with 16 players. Now, if we have 8, we just make 15. There are reasons. I think the queue group from 400 to 673 in about 50 or 100 card steps. The last was because I wanted to play with 16 players and have 14 card packs. We used to have 13 card packs. And I didn't want to include a lot of chaff, so I didn't move to 720 on the first try. And the reason I'm not doing now is cosmetic, because I have a box that won't fit more than 673 plus lands.
Very practical. I like that.
It's my only reason not to go 720, because actually I was, while brushing my teeth yesterday, I was sort of doing the math. Because I'm looking at your cube, Pedro. I think, he has 720. How would I add the extra 50 or for 48 if I would go to 720?
I mean, but then you can compare cubes on Cube Tutor, which is...
Yeah, sure. I wasn't thinking about actual cards yet. I was just thinking about the slots, how many in each color. And the extra card, the 73rd card, so to speak, is Booster Tutor, because if we play with 16 players, 14 packs, there are no boosters left. So Booster Tutor does nothing, so it comes out at the cube rotation, so we play the 672.
That's one of the questions I had for you, because I run Booster Tutor and it is absolutely awesome, but the only time I had 16 player booster draft, I just had to say, just ignore it, it's a blank.
Yeah, well, we included it in the cube rotation because somebody brought about 30 packs to give out as prizes. So I said no.
Oh, nice!
First, we're gonna open some for the booster tutor, and we also used it for Lore Seeker because we did we added the conspiracies in for the qualifier.
Actually, that was my very next question. So I noticed you guys run Agent of Acquisitions, Lore Seeker. And the Librarian and Canal Dredger. I mean, how are those guys? Did you actually run the last Cube Rotational with that package in there?
No. What I did for the first qualifier, which was sort of the afternoon B table, at first I was opposed to running, just adding a few conspiracies in, because I thought, if I want to cube with these cards, I just want to go all out. So what I did, I chose 24 cards, some in multiples, and I seeded them in the 24 packs used to drafting, and I can honestly say that it was too much. Because I think we had three Librarians and a couple of double strokes and...
jeez.
A couple of double strokes.
Yeah. Double stroke is so broken as well.
I can acknowledge that, but I would like to I would like to say this: that the guy who won that draft ignored all of them during the draft. He just said, "No, I don't like these cards. Just give me the red and white aggro beaters."
Yes, that works.
By the way, I did not like Agent, but probably because I used it totally wrong. I drafted in the first pack, and in the second pack, I thought, "Oh, there are seven cards I kind of like here. Let's just do this agent thing." And when I looked at the packs that I was passing, each pack, I said, "Oh my god, this has been wrong. This has been totally wrong. Oh, this is going downhill really, really, really fast."
At least you got a nice story out of it, right?
Yeah, true. But in the end, I ended up with two double strokes and unexpected potential. And I went 1 and 2. Potential named Utter End.
Yeah.
And stroke named, one named Genesis Wave and one named Temporal Mastery. And I did get some insane turns where I would just go, Mastery, copy that Mastery, regrowth this Mastery, untap everything. Make Genesis Wave for 8. Copy that Genesis Wave. Put my deck on the table. Take another turn. Attack you with my deck. Take another turn. Still attack you with the same deck. So that was the only match that I won, because the other two matches I just got. But the other two matches I just got totally stomped.
The ability to say I'm attacking you with my deck is just quite good, to be honest.
But this new the list that you looked at is the one that I made after, and now I'm just including one of each of the ones that I chose.
Yeah.
And I'm giving Agent another try because one poor experience does not make. It's probably better if you're deeper in the pack, or I do not know.
It never came up for us, but when we discussed the conspiracy cards a few months ago, we assumed it's a good mid to late pick.
Mm-hmm.
Either you get a god pack, or you get like 6, 7, 8 solid cards and you sweep those up. But it's just theory crafting. I never got to play with it.
Yeah, but I think for that purpose, the Librarian is just better. Because you don't skip everything else, and you can get the two best ones.
Yeah.
And then you just continue. I think the fact that you have to pass 7 other packs, I think does not weigh up to the advantage that you think you're getting by slamming agents and taking the pack.
I think you need some luck. Like, you need a really stacked pack with your, maybe if you're in hard aggro and you know people aren't playing that, you're going to get a pack full of aggro, but you're also going to get those as the last cards anyway, because they typically, a lot of 2-1s and stuff, go undrafted. Yeah, it's a good point.
So talk us a bit more about the finals. It's probably still fresh in your memory. Do you have any sweet stories?
Yeah, let's see. I don't know if either of you guys have ever played One Drop Cube.
No, we didn't. I did not, at least.
Well, the thing is, it's not what you think. You think, I'm going to curve all these beaters and I'm just going to run them over, and it doesn't happen, because what happens is they also make guys.
Yeah.
So I remember the first time that I played it, the very first game, I was actually surprised that my opponent had a first turn play, because I was totally absent-minded. Oh my god, he's going to stop my aggro plan because he made a guy, and now what do I do? But the result is also that I'm sort of, the cube is now a lot of more, the One Drop Cube is a lot more grindy and mana sync based than it used to be.
Yeah,
and, I can imagine.
That's also where we found out that Skorek and Curse Scroll and Skull Clamp are just too good for the format. Maybe if they were colored, then they could be okay, because people maybe had to pass them or whatever. Now people just take them, and sometimes they had multiples and they would just
sure.
demolish you.
But is Fireball too good?
Well, it's I know the CMC is one, but it's not typically cast for one, so it's per theory it's a no-go.
Okay. I mean, I guess Forks Bolt's pretty much a guaranteed 2-for-1, I suppose.
Pedro, did you say Fireball or Firebolt?
Fireball.
Okay, like I said, it is not played for 1.
Okay, yeah.
As opposed to Engineered Explosive, which is in this format typically played for 1, but it was also too good. It would just be a typical sandbag blowout thing.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm just asking because I think I saw probably Glenn Jones's list, and he ran Fireball and stuff like that. I don't know if Mikaia's was there as well.
I haven't noticed. Yeah. Maybe as a new version, I have not noticed.
Yeah.
I think the things that I remember most from this final, Matthias Petes. Matthias is the streamer at Matthias and NL.
Yeah, I watch his stream sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And Thijs is the former Dutch champion. So it was kind of my dream final, because they were also the only guys there that won one previously. Thijs won the first one, and I think Matthias won the third one. He won the Solomon two-headed giant thing.
Wow.
Okay.
Thijs was coming up the board with Steel Wall and Brassman. and he would just ride a longbow and just start grinding it out. And then Matthias, you went Shattering Spree, get both your guys.
Ouch.
Ouch. Shattering Spree is also nice, because I lost to a Niv-Magus elemental once that he targeted one of my artifacts, and then with all 5 copies, and then he exiled the first 4, and then with the last he blew up my artifact, and then he had a huge Niv-Magus.
Hey,
so after that, I also put Giga Drowse in, because I want to see more of that. I think it's awesome.
Ah, yeah.
Actually, Niv-Magus is one of the cards that stood out to me when I looked at the One Drop Cube list as being real bomb. That looks absolutely incredible in that list.
Yeah, you have to really work for it. Because
actually, I look at this list and I... how high a pick is Chronomaton? Because
I have no clue.
Okay, because I look at this list and I look at it, and then if you play it on the, I mean, then again, all the removal is 1 mana as well, so but if you start growing it, I assume it just runs out of hand pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's that ties in nicely with another subject that I wanted to talk about concerning the One Drop Cube. Because when I started goldfishing, I would make 12 mana decks, and I would just crush on turn 3.5. Yeah, this is a nice aggro format. And then as you actually play, say, oh man, I really need all this mana and I need it fast. You don't need a lot of lands. You just need to make those drops in the first five or six turns. Because like you said, you need to kill the Chronomaton when you still can. And there are a lot of things that need to be dealt with immediately if you want to beat them. It's also the reason that I scaled down the removal because there was a certain point when it was too much. It would just came down to one for one. Somebody sticks something, he wins. So that was really boring. So now I'm sort of back in a point where you can rush if you really have it, or it becomes a really grindy game, which is also nice.
Sure. So stuff like Scoop Mob and Dragon Master Outcast, you can pretty much kill those guys on sight.
Yeah. They're
champion of the parish.
Yeah.
Nice.
Also with the mana base. This sort of hard to explain for me because some people lose me during this analog, but okay. If you have a spell that costs 1R, right? You can use an island to cast that spell if you have a red source somewhere. So yeah. Islands are casting red spells, but in a one drop cube, an island will always cast a blue spell or an artifact. So this tells me that in essence, all blue cards and all other cards, I mean, all the one costing cards are essentially UU or RR because you really need an island or you really need a mountain. That's also why we came to the conclusion that 15, 16 lands is actually right instead of 12 to 14.
Okay. I think I'll follow that.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. I actually, when you started on that path, I assume you were going to say that your mana base, your 10 trylands and your 10 temples were sort of one drops themselves.
Yeah, I stole that notion from Glenn because he said these lands essentially cost one mana because you cannot play something on a turn that you pay them. And I said, that's an awesome idea, and I'm just going to steal that.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we talk about cubes, and someone somewhere has this awesome idea, and and you think, this is exactly what my cube needs, and...
Yeah, well, I have deep respect for the creative guys that come up with, like Eric Klug's zombie cube.
Yeah.
Or the guy who made this desert cube. Have you seen this on Twitter?
There was, I did.
With the 23 Kindles, the man is a genius.
Yeah. It was to tie with something you said a few minutes ago. You said you don't, your cube is not archetype based, it's more good stuff based. I'm sort of in that camp as well. Because sometimes you try to force people to play their archetypes, and people play with some cards that are only good if you have all the other cards on that archetype. And so my personal opinion is just, I want to play good cards, period, but let me try to keep some eye on synergies because Restoration Angel is awesome. But when you start thinking, you get Restoration Angel and Vancer and... You can have some sort of blink deck. So where am I getting with this? Recently, I've seen lots of people try to get their own cube, their themed cube. They only try to own their format, which is awesome. It's not entirely my cup of tea, but it's awesome. And sometimes I look at some of those lists and I think, in paper, this is an awesome idea. I don't think I would like to play with that cube. But then you look at the desert cube.
Yeah. There's another one of those sort of gimmick cubes floating around that's been around a while, which is the Mere Servitor sort of tribal Mere cube.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, you have
that is fantastic.
Yeah.
I think you build your deck and then you get 10 bonus mirrors, right?
I think so. Yeah, so that's the one guy.
The last time I checked it, you could get as many as you want, like of like basic lands.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, you get them as a bonus at the end of the draft. You can have any number of Mere Servitors who says at the beginning of your upkeep, if it's in play, you return all of the ones in the graveyard to play.
Yeah.
Each player does. And the stuff you can pull is presumably ridiculous. Yeah, I haven't played with it, but I would like to.
I can assume that the Ironworks are in that cube.
You would hope so.
What I actually think, sorry to just say one more thing about I think the best thing, flavor-wise and maybe drafting-wise, is you have to draft your basics.
Yeah.
And that's also because you're in a desert, you know. Stuff is scarce, life is hard. We'll make an extra rough for you. Go draft those islands.
Yeah,
you really need them.
I think that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Because we've talked a little bit on the show before about almost the opposite of that, where you've got people running separate land drafts. You know, then you get basics or whatever for free, but it's almost the opposite mm-hmm. idea where you have to prioritize a card, or do you actually want to be able to play stuff? Like you say, it's the sort of scarce resources. That's really cool.
I like the fact that you have to prioritize fixed in a normal draft.
Yeah,
I mean, it takes it a step beyond.
I mean, drafting your basics.
That could go badly wrong if you haven't done it before.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I will cook that up pretty badly.
So I guess we sort of went through all the things we wanted to talk. Is there anything we're missing, Thomas?
Mm-hmm. Let's see.
I've got a question for you about the computational cube. Let's go with that.
Yeah, sure.
Is that all right? Sure. So you're talking about, you know, cards running mainly good stuff and sort of rather than trying to force people into archetypes. But I noticed there's a few packages as well as the conspiracies. You've got the sort of Deceiver, XR, Kiki, Twin, Pest mm-hmm. Mike kind of package floating around. Is that something that you like as a combo? And I know in the show we talked about how we like the combo because the pieces are all sort of useful independently. Yeah, is that something that people have had success with?
Well, that's the reason that I run it. I cannot remember the first time that I wanted to put it in, but I'm really happy that these cards do also do something when they're not in this combo. And that's the reason that I've kept it in. Also, I'm still trying to think back when it actually happened. Because I was running Kiki Yiki, and I do not know, actually. it's probably player feedback. Somebody just said, "Hey, isn't this a cool combo?" And you're already running the angel and the conscripts and the Kiki Yiki. Can you not make it a bit more so I can actually draft that combo? And I said, okay, sure. You can see that Tess, the guy who won the first draft, the morning draft. I think he was running 5 out of 6 pieces, and he didn't even win that many games with it, because just copying some Hellkites is also pretty dandy.
Yeah, he was. He was running Kiki, Twin, Exarch, and Pestmite, but he had a lot of other good sort of random value targets, like Reclamation mm-hmm. Sage, stuff like that. Yeah, Hellkite, like you mentioned, and Primetime as well.
That's also really baffling to me that all those cards were at the same side of the tournament, so to speak.
Yeah, they're all in one half of the cube.
Yeah,
sometimes it happens.
I
had this guy. I told this story on the show before, so an apology to our listeners. But Thomas, you did not hear it.
No.
So one time, this guy drafted a pure combo deck. He got Tooth and Nail, Oath of Druids, Channel, Tinker, mm-hmm. Sneak mm-hmm. Attack, Crystal Shard, Splinter Twin, Progenitus, Blightsteel Colossus, Ulamog, Grizzlebrand, Eureka. Mm-hmm. He got like...
the worst.
I think he was missing the show and tell, but he got everything else. And I did not assume it was possible.
Well, I actually think that those decks are better if you go all out, because I used to try for the mono blue Tinker decks, so which is kind of awful if you did not get to Tinker.
Yeah.
But a few weeks ago I resolved beforehand I'm gonna draft the Teamer Channel and Show sneak attack thing. And I got some pieces, and I even got a little channel Demon Fire in there. The only card that I really missed was Sneak.
Yeah.
But because the deck was so I had a bunch of tutors, and because I had so many options, it played a lot better than the Whiff on Tinker deck. And that's also why I'm adding more and more of these pieces, because the decks just get better and better if they have more options. So I can imagine, Pedro, that the guy who drafted that deck, actually his deck would have been insane.
It was. He went only 2-1
mm-hmm.
because at the time I was running Mind Shrieker, and so he just died in 2 turns.
Oh my god.
Okay, mill your top card. Oh, it's a Progenitus. Bam.
Yeah, getcha.
Yeah. And, I lost my match against him, but mm-hmm. I was playing, the blue black vampire. I'm missing the name.
Haven Gulich?
Yes. No, not
Dustmantle Seer.
Dustmantle Seer.
Ah, right.
Okay, so let's both reveal. Land, Grizzlebrand. Okay. Lose 8. Next turn, reveal. Carnophage. Tooth and Nail. Nice.
Get him.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got to be, since cons, you've got to be careful where you put your dig through times and treasure cruises, right? If you go.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you don't think it costs 8, but actually it kind of does.
It kind of does. So, well, I would like to, I'm reminded of this because we're talking about, the cards, being in the half of the cube that you're drafting or not. The main reason my cube started growing 7 years ago is because I play every time, so the matches were getting really still really fast. Oh, you're playing those colors and you have these and these cards. So that was my reason to go big with the cube. So that the things wouldn't be so stale for me. But a real downside, I think, is that sometimes the pieces aren't there. Or you get these weird role player packs, 14 cards that you don't really want. Sometimes you get these packs and they're really lame.
Yeah, I know. I sometimes I'm mock drafting my cube and I look at the some packs and this is all awful. Why do I want this? Okay. Then I look at each card individually and then think, okay, each one of these cards is playing a role, but I need something.
Do you know what, Patrick? I kind of like that about cube because not every pack is an easy pick. Sometimes you have to make the best of a bad situation and the cards fit. You say, well, do I hate draft this or do I just kind of, you know, maybe take this as a kind of backup? Or it's kind of cool. But to go back to what you were saying, Thomas, about the redundancy on those effects, I think when you want a sneak attack effect, I'd maybe want to include stuff like Through the Breach, you know, just as a sort of backup option for those sort of things. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
I would have to say no, because I think it's too expensive for what it does. And
okay,
If I include cards for redundancy, they're almost functionally identical, like the 50 mana elves or something.
Yeah.
I don't want to run a worse version because it sort of does the same.
I see your point. Actually,
well,
I see.
Well, you can go through my list and call me out because if I do have something in there because
if you really want to push that archetype, I would suggest Oath of Druids or that particular archetype. What I found out is it's an old idea by Andrew Cooper Faust. If you want to you don't get the sneak attack, then you get the show and tell. You don't get the show and tell, you get the Eureka. You don't get the Eureka, you get the Reanimator, or the Natural Order, or the Channel.
Or the Tinker, for your battles. Yeah.
It's not entirely an archetype, but it's this huge list of cards. It's like a Chinese menu deck, you know? I want a bit of this, a bit of this, a bit of that. Yeah. I actually like Oath of Druids as a part of that puzzle.
I mean, that was kind of the point I was making. So you don't, as far as redundancy goes, you don't have two tinkers, you don't have two sneak attacks. There's nothing that simple. So you have to kind of go sideways a bit.
Yeah.
And start delving into, well, okay, I want to play big stuff cheap. How else can I achieve that sort of thing? So yeah, it's a good point that you make there, Pedro.
And, then you also get your Oath of Druids World Knit deck where you can mill your opponent out, but.
Yeah. I was never able to make that card work personally, the Oath of Druids, but I can see decks where.
It works in this situation. If you get a tight cube, a tight list, it's not at its best, but as, a piece of this puzzle, it's a really good card. But in a 360 list, it's not exactly what you want to be doing. There you want consistency. Here you just want, how can I say, cogs in an engine, you know? And I found Oath to be a good cog on this particular engine. But I'm not a fan of Through the Breach myself as well.
It's also because I think, from my point of view, red and blue are traditionally, I think, for me, the tightest colors. And that's also So cutting is really hard because when I made my cube 7 years ago, not only did I, like I said, use only what I had, but the pool was also more shallow.
Yeah.
So that's why cube designers now, I think they have to be aware much more of what they want colors to do instead of just including quality cards.
Completely. I completely agree with that.
Yes.
Yeah, that's something we talked about quite a bit recently. Especially, actually, I've always found historically red to be the easiest color to make cuts because there's a whole ton of redundancy. You've got X burn spells and whatever, Smagro creatures, maybe some artifact stuff, wildfire stuff. But there's a lot you can do with red now. So there's all those mid-rangey cards, and we've got token support as well now with Purphoros and stuff like that. Yeah, man. I mean, there's a ton of stuff you can do with red these days.
Yeah, Purphoros. I had him in a really short time. I think he got cut because I liked the other inclusion better, and I made the lazy cut, just cut the card that people don't play with.
Yeah.
But I had so much fun with that card. Just slam it, and then Siege Gang next turn, get you for 8.
Yeah. I mean, you seem to run your cube like a democracy, right?
No.
Okay, so what I found it works is you have to be some sort of benevolent dictator.
Yeah.
So you hear people, but you say, no, you are getting this Purphoros, and I will shove it down your throat until you draft it. I mean, I have to do that with aggro one drops, more or less. So you can just try to do that. You will draft this Purphoros and you will like it.
Well, the problem is that they just won't because they're really stubborn Dutch guys.
Is there any other kind?
No.
I would chuck him in, man. I'd give him another go. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of good red token cards these days.
Yeah, I would have to look up the actual cut that I made, but I think it was a lazy one.
At this point, I mean, I have some cards that I say to myself, okay, I will cut it now. I'm sure I will add it back in 6 months, 1 year. Yeah. I mean, luckily we're at a point where we can do that. I cut Living Death like a year ago or something because no one was drafting it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just recently added it back in for two reasons. Three, actually. One, because the time was kind of right because we got some good looters recently. Two, because some people said it should be something good to try. And three, because I got a foil copy in my From the Vault Annihilation. And
always a good reason.
Yes.
It helps.
Yeah.
On top of the Rolling Earthquake and Burning Eugenio, which finally make their debut for us.
Yeah, that made my day.
Yeah. Yes.
Because I was really looking forward to get the Wildfire deck in, and this just, wow.
Yeah.
Absolutely, me too.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
I talked with a lot of people around. They said, it's some store owners as well. No one likes this, and we had to sell this really cheap, and it's terrible. And I was like, my eyes were shining. No, this is absolutely awesome, because we get a Rolling Earthquake and the Burning of Genie. And that's the guys, okay, you like that? You're the only one.
Yeah, it's one man's trash, another man's treasure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cubers, there is a lot of good stuff in that, and there's a few fringe things I don't even play, but they're even playable, like Terminus and all those things. So, yeah, it was an awesome set for Cubers, even though it went cheaper than else.
Yeah, for me, it was just those two. I got them like a month after, just the two a month after the set was released. So.
You probably got them really cheap.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Now, I do understand the pain of the people that actually own them, because I was on the chase for, I actually had an English Overwhelming Forces and a Ravages.
Yeah.
And I sold the Forces because it was just not good enough. But I was really happy to have to own the Ravages. So I understand the pain of the people who are getting their Burnings and their Earthquakes devalued, but.
It's not entirely, it depends on the card. If you look at Imperial Recruiter, its price plummeted when they announced the Judge Reward promo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the Judge Reward promo was also quite low at some point. And by low, I mean like 60 euros or something.
I'll point out that
if you go look at it now, it's more expensive. I think, than before it was spoiled as a Judge Award promo.
I will just say that Wizards already showed their intent to reprint some of the stuff from P3K before they actually started hitting the really expensive staples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they were saying basically to people, look, we are going to reprint this stuff. If you don't want your stuff to crash, you move it on.
Get out now.
yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, we will see Imperial Seal again. We will see Ravages again, and then I'll be able to finally play it. So I'm just biding my time, basically.
Yeah. So I think we discussed a lot of nice stuff. Before we go, Thomas, I think it would be awesome if we did a crack a pack from your one drop cube. I have it open right in front of me. Me and Liam will try to discuss it for the first time, and then you can just insult us and call us names. And
yeah, because I was going to say that doing the normal cube is a pointless exercise, because I see my normal cube as a pretty basic cube. So I think there's nothing to be gained from cracking a pack from the normal cube.
Yeah,
I'm down for some one drop action. Let's go.
Let's try.
But how do I see the pack?
I will read it out loud.
I'm gonna write this down as we go.
First of all, we have Herald of Anafenza from Cannes. Next, we have Grim Lavamancer. Then we get Savage Lands. Fourth is Temple of Malice.
Oh, wait, sorry. Do you have it set for 9?
Sorry?
Do you have it set for 9 for 9 cards?
Oh, no, I don't.
Just read out the first 9, then.
Okay.
No, it's
5 more.
I think you have 7 right now.
I have 4 cards right now. I have 15 in front of me.
Oh, okay. Just read the first 9. Then,
okay,
yeah.
So fifth is Stromkirk Noble, then Enclave Cryptologist. Seventh is Viridian Longbow. Eighth is Reanimate, and the ninth card is Tattermunge Maniac. Okay, so what do we pick here?
I think my pick would be Grim Lavamancer.
Okay, I'm looking at Lavamancer, Herald,
yeah.
Cryptologist.
Yeah, me too. Those are the three that I like a lot.
Yeah.
I think Reanimate loses a lot of its value in a one-drop cube for kind of obvious reasons.
Sorry, which one?
Reanimate.
Okay.
So today, I think first thing out of my head, I would like to play Herald. I don't know if White is strong in the cube or not, but I had the chance to play with it in the pre-release and against it. And I really like the dynamic. Probably it's one of those kill inside one drops.
Yeah, I really like the double aspect. It's churning out tokens and it's growing.
Yeah, that seems like the sort of mechanic Outlast to be really good in this cube, where you know you're not going to see anything that's got a huge body and you're going to provide some immediate threat. Well, not immediate, the opposite, eventual.
I like it. That would be my pick, I think.
I'm sticking with Grim Lavamancer, I think.
I really like Lavamancer. I'm not sure about Herald, only because I have not seen it in action yet. I think you're misvaluing the Reanimate, because some cards are hard to deal with, and when you finally get them gone, him just paying one life to getting it again, for instance, the Lavamancer or the Herald, is such a huge pain. So Reanimate is a lot better than it looks, mostly because it's only one life.
Yeah, okay, and a card.
Yeah. A card that you did not name, which is completely undervalued, not by the players drafting it, but by you here, is the Longbow.
Okay, yeah. Is it because it's colorless or the repeatable removal?
It's repeatable. It's just it made combat really awkward for the player that does not have it. And if the creature dies, you still have a bow. And sometimes it's weird that you don't have haste if you get a new creature. But the bow is just really, really good.
Can I make a confession? It's because I don't actually know what it does.
So, Viridian Longbow.
If I undervalued it, it might be because of that.
Okay, so, one mana.
That makes a lot of sense, Liam.
Obviously, one mana to play. 3 to equip.
Oh, yeah.
Equipped creature has tap, this creature deals one damage to target creature or player.
Yes, I remember that now.
From Mirrodin.
Mirrodin Unlimited. I did run a few of those, I think. Yeah, okay. I can see that being pretty good. I think I still pick Lavamance, but I can respect what that thing does in this environment for sure.
Now, Lavamance is really good. Also, because now the spell-based removal has been toned down, so that makes the creature guys a bit better.
I see.
Yeah.
I already touched on this before. There was too much spell-based removal to a point when it was oppressive and unfun.
Okay.
Both oppressive and unfun is something you don't want in any cube, in my opinion.
No.
Yeah. So I think this is it. This was a really nice discussion.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming on.
So Thomas, if people want to check your cubes and to get more stories about the Cube Vitational, where can they get them?
They can go to tapintothecube.com. And sometimes I write. Mostly I just post deck pics.
Yeah, some sweet pictures.
I'm not really much of a writer. Sometimes I get the bug and you get a really nice piece, but mostly it's just, hey, these are the decks and these guys played and I will see you next time. And my cubes on Cube Tutor are 63 for the normal cube and 456 for the one drop.
We will make sure to link them on the show notes.
There's just one more thing that timing is kind of weird, but Jan talked about the signed basic lands.
Oh yeah, I was almost forgetting about that.
Because you asked if there were prizes, and it was a couple of years people brought packs and they were distributed, and people would just donate them to me afterwards because I was running the tournament anyway.
Yeah.
But not only do the top four get the sign, and we've been doing it for 5 years now, so I have 20 signed lands, which is really nice. And but the winner also gets a trophy, and each year has a different one. So it's not like one you have to return next year. I really like that Jan said that he actively searches them out when he built his deck. Because
I remember that.
I never heard that. I just know that Thijs, he always likes to find his own lands. He's going for one of each. That's why he chose the planes this year, and I see now that I took the wrong planes because I'm kind of an idiot. I took the Zendikar planes. Oh, okay.
Okay.
I'll have him redo it.
But yeah, it's an awesome idea. To be completely honest, I've been thinking about running one of these myself because it's just such a great idea. And it actually gives some additional value to your cubing sessions.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Nice nostalgia there.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the biggest thing that I like about it, it's also when you notice that that there's a buzz going when the qualifiers are drying up. People come up to me and say, "Oh, how many qualifiers left? Who's in? When's the next one?"
Oh wow!
Because of these 35 people, I think there are around half of them. They really want to make you professional. Thijs actually says it's the only tournament of the year that actually matters. Of course, he's the only one that goes that far. But it's nice to when you notice that it's alive in their minds instead of just being another Cubecraft.
I like that. That's nice.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard something from some guys once at a shop that they had this thing where in the cube they. If a creature would kill a player, they would put a little tally count on the card.
Oh, sweet,
You'd have a kill count, and you'd have, you know, your Frost Titans or Prime Titans or whatever, you know, some big dumb stuff with loads of kills, and then you try and kill your opponent with, like, a Llanowar Elves just to get that one mark on it.
Just to shame
them forever.
Yeah, we had a couple of notches on Skittles. It was the only card we did it because it was the only infect guy. But
well, yeah, he's just a blowout if you can hit with him twice or three times or whatever.
Yeah. No, you just equip it and hit twice.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so this was it. This was awesome talking with you, Thomas. I hope you liked coming on the show.
Yeah.
And don't forget to comment on the show if you like this idea. Maybe if you live nearby and want to ask Thomas really nicely if he lets you play,
Well, now you know where to find him.
Yes. So,
Tom Krone, Tomkrone on Twitter.
Yes, there's that as well. You can also follow us at MTG in 3D. That's it for this week. Thank you so much, guys, for this awesome conversation.
It's been sweet.
Yeah. And,
yeah, thank you very much. It's been fun.
It was, and I guess we'll see you next time.
Take care and happy cubing.
Bye.